In this Thanksgiving special episode, I sit down with my youngest son, Jake. We have a lovely conversation on things that we're thankful for, but we also had a conversation. Well, we just basted IUL a little bit as well. We had fun. Thank you for listening. All right. Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm as excited as I can be to have our co-host here, Jake Nethery. He's my youngest son. Jake, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm trying to live the dream.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's, you know, it's been a long week, but it's a good one. Like, we're change is coming here, and it's good change, man. I'm excited. I'm excited about the future of not just like our office, but of really the world of IBC. I think some serious change is coming.
Perfect. Well, change is inevitable. There's no, you know, death, taxes, and change, right? Future's unknown, but you know it's full of change. So we're going to like have a, which we normally do, a Thanksgiving special, and just kind of free flowing and being Thanksgiving, you know, it's like, got to kind of talk about things you're thankful for, you know, and I've thought a little bit about that. And, you know, a lot of what I'm thankful for has not changed over the last several years, you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
Writing out a list of things that you're thankful for, it's like, I mean, it's a small list. Like, not that I'm not thankful for a lot of things, but the overarching themes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, family, friends. It's, you know, the life that I have. It's God's blessings. Those are the things I'm thankful for. It's a very easy list, really, when you start putting it together. You know, thankful for the clients, for you guys. Yeah. I mean,
the listeners and clients, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I think a lot, you know, talking about easy list, simple list, you know, there's simplicity truly is a virtue.
Yeah.
And, you know, life can be very simple, or we can complicate the fire out of anything. I know I can complicate the fire out of anything between here and the front door. And I can sell myself anything between here and the front door, too. But, you know, I was in just to not to like, oh, here's a list of everything I'm thankful for, but, you know, we were just kind of talking about it before, you know, the recording started. You had mentioned the cool books that are back there, and there really are some cool books that are back there. And mm-hmm. we have cool books all throughout. I have a bookstore, have an office, and I mean, there's books everywhere, right? but some of the cool books, and we were kind of talking about that, you know, if I didn't do what I did, which I do what I do because I love people and knowledge and expanding, you know, and sharing and encouraging, specifically, you know, with the infinite banking concept, but the knowledge. And if I didn't do what I do, and I pretty much immersed myself in Christian doctrine, history, way back in how, you know, I'm talking about 1500 years BC, right? You know, all the way back. But, and then coming forward, it's just very interesting. You know, you pointed out Josephus, and, mm-hmm. and we talked about Strabo and Herodotus and Pliny the Elder and Pliny the Younger and other references that they've referenced, works that are not available today. I mean, mm-hmm. there is so much. Yeah. And that's what I do every night, is consume stuff like that. And that's what I would do, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was kind of a conversation before the recording started.
I have no idea what I would do if I didn't do this. I guess I would do something similar in terms of trying to help clients and people, you know, retain their wealth, retain, you know, whatever is theirs. I don't know what form that would look like.
Yeah.
Like if life insurance just didn't exist anymore. Like, which, again, no fear of that, but at the end of the day, like, if for whatever reason, like, same thing, like, for most people out there, you have a job. Like, if you're working at Taco Bell and Taco Bell doesn't exist anymore, what do you do? It's like,
go to Taco Patio or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you do something is akin to it. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be doing IUL.
Yeah, we'll probably talk about IUL. That's a pretty hot topic here lately.
Yeah.
You know, no question about that.
It's Kyle Busch, right? The NASCAR driver that.
Everybody's probably seen. If you haven't, you know, you know, I have the 50-page complaint. I've read the complaint. I've read the initial articles whenever, you know, the suit was filed. And, you know, David Stearns, the president of Becoming Your Own Banker, LLC, co-director of the Nelson Nash Institute, we recorded an episode for him, for them, for the Nelson Nash Institute, just so they could talk about it. And it, surely not the only one. I'm sure he's recorded others. But I think that'll be released Monday.
Oof.
So this is, you know, the 14th. So this is Friday. So, you know, somewhere Monday the 17th on the Infinite Banking Initiative.
Yeah.
But then we, and what we, so when I'm a guest somewhere that has a platform or a podcast or what have you, you know, we typically, we let them release theirs first and then we release ours. So we have a copy. And so we're going to release that. My whole point to all of this is, IUL has been in the news, Kyle Busch, and I went on their Twitter account, you know, so I'm trying to understand Twitter, you know, I mean, I'm not.
X,
sorry. Yeah, see? anyway, I followed Kyle Busch, you know, and yeah. I went down the rabbit hole of reading all of the comments, mm-hmm. right? And they had him and his wife had about a 90, or a short video, and that's what I was reading, the comments on that video. And you know, there's nothing new under the sun in the life insurance business.
What do you mean? Agents are, and they're apologizing, not apologizing, but saying, oh no, this was an odd case, this is not the usual.
No, it was you know, anytime the life insurance and I've said it many times, mm-hmm. you know, the life insurance industry generally earns every black eye that they get, right? Fair. Whether it's lack of training, you know, questionable marketing practices, questionable, and this is me and my verbiage, right? Questionable products, mm-hmm. And what have you. But there were, you could tell there were agents and advisors on there that's like, well, you know, this is a classic case of, oh, I didn't understand, you know, some years later, it was a tragic mistake. I want all my money back. Others were like, oh, you know, IUL is the worst thing ever. And so it covers all of the positions.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, it was entertaining for me. and which I do that a lot comparatively, looking at comments on whether it's Facebook, Instagram, the content that's put out there, and then the comments that the content encourages. Mm-hmm. And I typically always walk away. I can identify the agents from their comments. I can identify, which everyone could, the by term and invested inference, all the people who don't own life insurance, you know, because you can clearly see, you just see their thinking, right?
Yeah.
And that's more entertaining for me, all the comments and the back and forth.
Yeah.
Then surely, I guess there's an element of education.
But. No, I 100% agree. If I'm going on like and reading about something, I really just want to get to the comments. I want to get the synopsis of what's going on, and then I want to get to the comments because there's always the first few are going to be hilarious. And then after that, it's just going to be, you know, discourse, people talking.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
I would say, you know, for the listener, whether you're an agent, advisor, a consumer of infinite, a practitioner of the infinite banking concept, whether you own life insurance, you don't own it, you might think you might want to own it or what have you. But especially if you're a financial professional, I think that 50-page complaint, the legal complaint, is available online. And I think I would encourage everyone to read it. If you have any interest in this idea of putting money, i.e. paying a premium, for life insurance.
Why else would you be listening? I mean, at the end of the day, if you're listening to hours and hours and hours of content, right, you obviously have an interest in either becoming your own banker or the infinite banking concept, whatever it happens to be, like you're kind of narrowing down, like focusing on, getting excited about. Educate yourself. Like, I think we really should just say this. I think it starts with Nelson's book. And I know we maybe say this every podcast or every other podcast, you know, it goes back to Nelson's book. I don't understand how people can pay ridiculous sums of money and not read Nelson's book. I don't either.
You know, it makes no sense to me.
I mean, I would have that thing. I would have Nelson's book. I don't want to say memorized, but I mean, dang near, like, you know, the points of the book. Like,
at least you should be comfortable with it. And where is it, if it's used initially as educational, you know, just this is a great concept or an interesting concept, you know, and you read it, it's either going to resonate or not. Maybe it does now, maybe it does later. Mm-hmm. But if you're paying premium, I mean, that's a resource that shouldn't be left out.
Yeah.
And that brings me to a point that I'm truly thankful for, you know, my relationship with the creator, you know, the one who created the universe. And I'll say that in knowing full well that, you know, there may be atheists or people who hate Christians or whatever. And it's like, God bless you. You can believe and do what you want. You know, I'm not called to be a preacher, or you'd probably know my name if I was. But the simplicity of Nelson's work, it is so simple. I don't know how many times over the years I've given plenty of presentations, and simplicity is always somewhere in the conversation, if not in the title.
Fair.
You know, and to me, it's so simple. And then the more the advisor, the agent, the consumer wants to complicate it to, you know, improve it or to, you know, get cash sooner than a properly structured policy would provide and the stability of a properly structured. You know, when you start manipulating is the proper term in my humble opinion. When you start manipulating structures and of a life insurance contract, you don't have to do that to achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
And if we're going to practice and control the banking function, if we're going to practice the infinite banking concept, and therefore be in a position and have the actual contractual ability to control the banking function, you must have capital.
Yeah.
I mean, I say that and it's like, well, James, why even saying that? So of course, no. The proper, disciplined, on purpose, with intent, effort of capital formation.
Yeah.
And capital accumulation in an entity that you own and control. And or control, right? You may not own it, but, and so how simple is that? It's pretty simple, you know, but there, it takes understanding, you know, more knowledge. I'm not saying like, you don't understand, you know, or you're ignorant. I'm not saying that, although there's nothing wrong with ignorance, it can be corrected.
Yeah.
Just have an understanding of the simple work that Nelson did without the complications. You will achieve everything that you want if the infinite banking concept resonates with you.
Yeah.
But we can't jump over the idea that you're, in fact, paying a life insurance premium, and it should be to a very stable company, and you don't have to manipulate a policy to artificially achieve what you think you want to achieve, what you want to achieve, because you'll achieve that. But when you start manipulating the structure or what have you, the fragility that's introduced to that, that's not apparent for some time, you know, but all that can be learned, I think.
I have a question for you. So Nelson, this surprises a lot of our clients and a lot of people I talk to, but Nelson was an agent, was a life insurance agent.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these people who are coming up with these new, I don't want to call them schemes or, you know, things like that, but
they're— I call them beautiful presentations, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you know, they're coming up with these presentations that are, you know, getting people to, you know, wander off the reservation, you know, not do IBC anymore, do whatever it is they're doing, and they're calling it IBC.
IBC 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, they don't—
I got a bolt on.
Well, I would appreciate them calling it IBC 2.0. They don't. they call it IBC, and it it's misclassification.
That's exactly what it is.
They're conflating what IBC is with what they're doing.
It's a usurpation. I mean, there's.
So help me out, and maybe the listeners too. Like, can you tell like how long Nelson was an agent? Kind of like how he got in the business, and then why eventually he stopped writing business. Yeah, because IABC. But
I think that's probably come up previously in different episodes over the years, and the way I like to start, you know, and I'm bringing up my calculator, you know, it always reminds me of when pocket calculators came out and you couldn't have one in school and the teacher said, you better do it by pencil. You're not always going to have a calculator, you know, whatever. Yeah, right. So I appreciate that's a very legitimate question. And I think it's an important question because for several reasons, but I get pushed back a lot of times. James, why are you talking about that? Why are you talking about this? Why are you talking about the history? Why are you talking about all that? Because you can't separate any of it,
yeah,
in my humble opinion. And if you can draw the proper connections or just the connections, you know, then it helps understanding. It helps me. It helps make sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want to learn about Christianity, but you're going to leave out all the old works. You know, can we go broader? Can we go deeper and understand the time periods of history and, you know, it just helps. Okay. Mm-hmm. I like to start. Nelson Nash, born in 1931.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So when he turned 13, his daddy bought a life insurance policy on him. All right. So what are we talking about? 1944?
Yeah.
He turned 14, 1945. And his daddy said, here, boy, this is yours. You pay for it. 14 years of age. All right, and then he goes on and he meets Mary, and I couldn't recall it from memory. I'd have to think through it, but you know, Nelson was he was fly. You know, he met Mary. They got married. He buys another policy on him, buys one on Mary, and you know, they're in their early 20s.
All yeah. Right?
And he gets educated. His story's in the first of his first book, Becoming Your Own Banker. You know, he's an aviator, Army, Air Force, and then he got into the forestry business, right? That didn't go well. Some people that he went into business with didn't keep their end of the bargain. Who's shocked, right? So anyway, he becomes and his brother was a life insurance agent. And the illustration, well, he talks about his 1959 State Farm policy in depth in his second book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, right? Well, his brother was a State Farm agent that he purchased that policy from. And he talked about it in every seminar that he did that I attended. Okay, so 1959, right? And then business endeavors within the forestry industry didn't go well or as agreed and planned with other partners and stuff. So he becomes a licensed life insurance agent in 1964. Okay. Now you think in history, what's going on in 1964, 1970, you know, you have that business cycle. When I first got licensed for securities in, I think it was 1991, 1992. I went to work for a Fortune 500 company that had mutual funds, and you know, that's a whole story on mutual funds, explaining what a mutual fund is to prospective clients. But my point here is the older advisors that I worked with, mm-hmm, they all had lived through that, 71, 72, 73. Anyway, that business cycle. And I don't want to get sidetracked. Okay, so he's licensed in 1964. He goes to work with a very large company, Equitable Life Assurance Society, right, who later demutualized. Mm-hmm. A French company, AXA, purchased them. And, you know, Nelson has lots of comments on stock companies, right, and the outside CEO and the benefits of mutual ownership and the mutual construct of a life insurance company. When they demutualize into a stock company, you know, they get to be all things to all people. And just to put a cap on that, it was in the last few years that AXA has spun off Equitable Assurance, right? They've spun them off. So now we have Equitable Assurance. And my question is it possible for a company to remutualize? And the short answer is yes. But will they? No. Has it been done? I don't know if it has. Anyway, that would be very interesting to me if that company would remutualize, but I doubt they will. Okay. So he's going along as a very good agent, set lots of records. The man bought life insurance, and he knew how to expand people's thinking about life insurance, right, and what it could do for you.
So Nelson was a successful life insurance agent who knew what he was doing back in the 60s and 70s.
In the 80s, yes.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, back in the 60s and 70s, he knew what he was doing and was a successful agent. Please continue. I'm sorry.
No, very, very successful. And so, you know, along comes the 80s and all that debacle, the real estate, and he loved real estate and did real estate. And, you know, he talks about all that in his books and his works, right? And when he printed the book, when it was published in 2000, he stopped writing as an agent new consumers, right? Mm-hmm. New clients. He maintained his clients, and he wrote policies on his family and for his family.
Yeah.
Right? And way up past 2010, 2015, to my knowledge, he did that, right? I asked him one time, Jake, I'm like, Nelson, why life insurance? Why life insurance? And it was a sincere question, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, James, he said, I've received the best financial advice from life insurance agents, right? So before he became an agent.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the way he's answered initially, but then it continued a conversation. But does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting. I see people like on TikTok or YouTube, whatever it happens to be, you know, newly licensed or they, you know, new to the business, whatever happens, if they're young people, like not trying to knock young people. I'm young person like myself.
Kind of.
Well, no, like, you know, Ryan Griggs wrote a fantastic book that you guys should check out because, like, I mean, young people, like, can do some great things, but it's the arrogance and the ego of young people thinking they can improve Nelson's. Like, you will never hear Ryan Griggs, who's maybe one of the smartest people I've ever met, say he's going to improve on Nelson's work.
No.
You'll never hear him say it. And you think these young guys who are, you know, smiling, flashy, they look good, they're cute, whatever it happens to be that attracts you to them, like who have no experience or very little experience in this business, they are going to reinvent the actual wheel and create something brand new that's better than what Nelson came up with. It's like it's so ego to me. There's so much ego there. It just it blows me away. And so when I see this IUL stuff, like, I'm not shocked and surprised at all whatsoever. Like that this is nothing new. Like, I'm just like, yeah, did you expect something different to happen? But a lot of people seem to be shocked. And again, people in the IBC world seem to be shocked. You have agents who are even with the Nelson Nash Institute writing IUL policies.
Well, they're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to.
David and I spoke on that when...
But we've seen them come across our desks, like people showing us illustrations from other agents who are well-known and affiliated, and they're IUL illustrations, and they're brand new, and you're like, oh, okay, so I guess you're writing IUL now. And it's like, these people, like, I've heard crickets about IUL from them. But at the end of the day, it's like, why are you shocked? Page 39, if you can read, you have the ability to read. Nelson clearly states why IBC specifically, I'm not saying that, I will say IUL doesn't work for anybody, but what I'm trying to say is specifically the infinite banking concept will accelerate the issues with IUL because of your loaning and again, increasing, you know, cost of insurance with the IUL each and every year with you taking out more loans. So eventually your cash value is going to start getting eaten up by the cost of insurance. Well, if you have an outstanding loan that's compounding too, do you see one number's going down, one number's going up? And when they meet, that's ugly. That's an ugly situation right there. And I don't know if that's exactly what happened to Kyle Busch. I don't know. That's speculation what's going on there. But at the end of the day, it's like it is a recipe for disaster. Nelson clearly laid that out. I mean, very simply.
It's so not complicated and it's so simple that he didn't spend an exuberant amount of time on it, you know, and nor should one have to. There's quite a bit there, if I could.
Yeah.
You know, you point out page 39.
Yeah.
And it's my thoughts, page 39, becoming your own banker. It's my thoughts on universal and variable life. So universal life, it's either straight universal life or it's indexed universal life or it's variable universal life, right? They're all... The only difference is the side account that creates the accumulation, right? There's two things, the cost of insurance and the side account for an accumulation, right? And like you mentioned, the cost of insurance goes up. And on the call with David the other day, mm-hmm. and I'll say it again because it didn't really dawn on me until that conversation, you know, because like I didn't prep today. I just came in, you know, and, mm-hmm. Which I rarely prep. And that's why there's not a full series released yet. And other works are still undone. You know, it's taking making the time to do the proper prep work. Right. Which I'm very aware of and kind of prepping before the call with David. Yeah. Right. Because he did a release to the Nelson Nations and to the general public. You know, from the Nelson Nations Institute, their position on IUL. And anyway, and he references in there, of course, page 39, Nelson's book, and then chapter 9 of his second book, Building a Warehouse of Wealth. And then I pulled out the practitioner's manual, mm-hmm. you know, just to peruse. It's been a minute since I looked at it, you know. I was 001. I mean, I initially read it all before it was released. You know, anyway, it's been a minute since I revisited it. But if I'm looking at page 39, the printed book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and I understand it's online, and I understand you can get a digital copy, and by golly, if that helps you, go get them. But not in lieu of, not instead of, just because you have those or access to those doesn't mean you shouldn't own a physical copy, in my humble opinion, of Becoming Your Own Banker. If I'm looking at page 39, reading one page, Nelson's comments on UL, all I have to do is look left on page 38. And I know you wear page 38 out personally and professionally. Page 38, and we've talked about this many times, but Nelson tells you how to structure a policy. Now, does that mean, you know, that's an example of how to structure a policy, right? I just want to make that point. You're looking at page 39, Becoming Your Own Banker. While you're there, go ahead and look left, you know, and have an understanding of that. You know, if we go back to the IUL, I don't want to go too far away from the Bush. Mm-hmm. You know, the argument has moved into the UL, and it has existed in the infinite banking footprint for some time. We use these broad terms of, you know, properly structured, specifically designed, specially designed whole life policies. That's very broad, right? And then the argument's gotten into the most base fundamental components. What percentage of premium should be paid to a base and what percentage of premium should be paid to a PUA? It's not a new argument. It's very old. It's like I've talked almost more than I feel like I need to. But
yeah.
The same argument has carried over into IUL. Well, the structures, you know, they don't know how to structure it. The people who don't like IUL.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing is... The same points are being made, the same arguments are being made. Well, there's a target premium for an IUL, and then excess premium. That's what it's called. That's the verbiage in the industry. With Whole Life and the Infinite Banking footprint, there's a base premium and then a dynamic PUA. And so the argument, which is so broad and unclear but pithy, right, is like, whoa, you just squeezed the target premium down to where you have all cash and the excess premium. Well, you know what you're doing to the structure of the universal life policy when you do that? And you know what's going to happen out into the future?
Tell us.
Yeah, I don't know either, but you're adding fragility, and there's going to be an issue sometime in the future. It's a matter of time. And I know all you agents that love no base, anti-capitalistic thinking of, you know, no base, no death benefit. It's all, I appreciate your comments, but you can keep them. Okay. You can't move someone's not moving the past the ability to look beyond next week.
Yeah.
Next year. You know, if I pay a premium, how much of a loan check can I have in my hand in 31 days? You know, so, well, hell, you hadn't been saving money anyway. You're going to like try to fix all that overnight?
Huh. you know, something that's interesting. I feel like a lot of that stuff didn't start popping up. A lot of these different like versions didn't start popping up until after Nelson passed. And it seems to me that it was because if they did pop up during that point in time, you'd have the author who could be like, yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not IBC. That's not what I'm talking about. Without that kind of rebuttal directly from Nelson, it seems like it's allowed that kind of that kind of thinking, that kind of product, that whatever you want to call it, yep, scheme to, you know, flourish and grow. When, I guess, combating some of that, like, let's be honest, I think it's very easy to say there is a bunch of different types of policy, a bunch of different types of scheme, whether it's 90-10, whether it's whatever it happens. Gosh, there's so many of them. I think it's interesting that Nelson in his book specifically didn't say what type of base to PUA structure there was. And he shared several different illustrations with several different types of structures, almost like they're like the policy should be designed to the client, not based off of some arbitrary number that people come up with or whatever the lowest amount of base that you can put into a base that a company would allow.
Without backing into the first seven. That's a great point. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the word thinking. That's where the issue truly is.
Yeah.
The issue of these designs and the focus on the PUA and the base and the IUL or whatever, it's in the thinking. The genesis of IUL is based in the flawed thinking of the life insurance industry. In a response to Ralph Nader, you know, the consumer protectionist, Whole Life is too complicated. You can't understand it. You need to unbundle. And Nelson talks about this. You need to unbundle Whole Life insurance, right? And it can't be done. But that was the life insurance industry's attempt to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I don't really want to not answer your question, at least broadly. The result of that kind of structure in IUL, that kind of structure happened sooner, but I have three cases on my desk that I have the pleasure to work with and through. Three cases on my desk that specifically have IUL policies, significant premium. They're different. You know, might have been a second to die or whatever they are. And I'm aware of them. I'm going to work through to a true solution. In these particular cases, and I'm not saying all, I'll say the majority, will wind up where the owner has paid significant premium into these policies. Mm-hmm. And now they're aging. Well, they've been aging the whole time, but now they're hitting that exponential curve, right, in the cost of insurance, because every year you get closer to graduation, the cost of the insurance goes up. And so what do? Right? And so you have an asset, quote unquote, you put a lot of money into this and had a purpose, estate planning, you know, tax-free retirement income. I want to It's the best I can say. But that's where they ultimately wind up. How do I manage this asset? What do I do? What is the exit strategy? Mm-hmm. What is the most beneficial, profitable, least cost to the estate, to the aging parents, grandparents, whomever they are? Mm-hmm. How do we manage this? Do we get mad and quit and walk away with the loss that you can't write off because it's life insurance? You know, do you ask the company to reduce the death benefit? All right. That'll reduce the cost of insurance. Well, that maybe. Well, how much can you do that? Well, the contract controls that, not you. You know, can you pay more premium to keep the death benefit? Can you reduce the death benefit and pay more premium? Yeah. That's where they wind up at some point in time. You know, and maybe the policies were not a lot of premium was paid into them, you know, and so the loss would be acceptable. I don't know. Every case is different. But that's where they wind up. What do you do with this now? Because mm-hmm. it didn't pan out the way you thought it would.
Yeah.
And that can apply to any estate plan, any kind of investment program, any kind of a savings program, any kind of life insurance. It didn't pan out like I thought. I either didn't pay the premium, the company didn't deliver, a combination of both. So that's where they wind up. That's really an answer. That would be my answer to your question, right? What do you do? You do what you have to do, and you do what is best for the consumer, you know. But then, too, I have another one. We see these all the time. Mm-hmm. IUL, different. We see a lot, and we don't see everything. We don't know everything. But I reviewed an IUL policy for an individual that wanted to sell it, right? Mm-hmm. And they had heard me say in the podcast before, you know, James, you buy, you know, would you want to buy this? And I did all the mathematical calculations, you know, with the information that I had. And, you know, the possibility of that policy being enforced when she dies, it was there. Mm-hmm. Could there be a rate of return on there? Yeah, there could be. But it was like a hard no for me. And I shared all this with them. And they're a client. You know, this is not free consultative work. But I just, like, here it is. This is what, and this is, these are the likely outcomes. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you want it, you buy it. But then that changes the whole dynamic of life insurance and the tax treatment of life insurance, too.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to continue on and on, but that's where all plans that have gone off the rails wind up. It should wind up in front of somebody that's competent and knowledgeable in what to do when it has gone very differently than what was originally intended. What do you do? And then in Kyle Busch's, in their case, it's like, it's a lawsuit, you know?
Well, it's funny. I feel like he has something there. And specifically, I think it's because of how IUL is marketed as well. I think there's a lot of faulty marketing in just IUL, the IUL, not talking about VUL, UL space, IUL space specifically, as it's marketed as a safer alternative to the UL and VUL. And then this stuff happens and you're like, I was told this is the safer version. Like, what do you mean? Like, I think maybe that's part of where the fervor of, like, not just that Kyle Busch is a big name, but it's like, this is something that is legitimately marketed as like a safer alternative in the VUL, the UL, you know, series of products. IUL is marketed as the safe alternative.
Lose money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have these situations happening risk. And they're high. Yeah. And then you have all the IUL apologists that come out, you know, the woodworks, and they're like, oh no, no, this is a specific unique case. This stuff doesn't happen. It's interesting. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, but to me, it's, and I've said it before, and I'm not giving advice, but if you want to put your money into the market, go put your money into the market. You know, if you're going to invest, it introduces an element of risk. Well, what is risk? It's a probability of loss. Why would I expose anything to that? Well, it's the potential, the possibility there could be a higher rate of return. The IUL all ULs are they are an interest rate, a rate of return, sell and purchase. It's all based on actuarial, not even actuarial spreadsheets. It's all based on Excel spreadsheets and illustrations, you know, and there's, you can't get every characteristic of a life insurance policy to uniquely squeeze into an Excel. Yeah. So, you know, you're not going to be able to, but it's boiled down, IUL, all UL is sold and purchased on the idea of a higher rate of return, mm-hmm. right? And then you throw in the element, the verbiage of no risk, which is, no, there is risk. It's not market loss risk. It's not market loss risk, but there is, you got, anytime you add the investment element into a life insurance contract, you're by very construct in nature introducing additional risk. No question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the marketing, yeah, people that should do better, there's no question. And that's my encouragement, you know, is to do better. And if you don't know what to do, go ahead and educate yourself before you do anything. Well, how do I do that, James? Well, it depends on what you're trying to learn, right? But if you're specifically trying to learn about the infinite banking concept, you should go to the original works, the first works, the foundation, you know, becoming your own banker, building a warehouse of wealth, how privatized banking really works, Nelson's 6.5-hour DVD that's available, you know, accessible electronic, Ryan Griggs's book, you know, How to Buy a Whole Life. Oh, my gosh. If you are literally, genuinely considering buying life insurance, those are required works. Absolutely. They're required. It's like, I mean, if you want to have a legitimate understanding, not for the life of me, what surprises me and shocks me, because I'm with you, that's one of the first questions of James, what do you think about this? I mean, the day they file the lawsuit, I get emails and all kinds of stuff, or the day they publish this stuff, you know, what do you think? What do you think? And I'm like, what? Who's shocked here? You know, add scale for, you know, attention. Yeah. I don't know. To me, if you can educate yourself for under, let's say under $400, I don't know what all that stuff costs, right? You get a starter kit and all of these things that I'd mentioned, hard copies, digital copies, audio versions, all of it right there. Maybe $400. And you're going to pay a $500 a month premium, a $50,000 a year premium, a $100,000 a year premium, $500,000 a year in premium. I don't care what the number is, but you won't spend $400 in some time. You would prefer to go to TikTok and get educated in 1 minute sound bites? Okay.
It's not a recipe for success, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, the positive thing is regarding all of that, that there is a legitimate product. I don't want to say IUL is illegitimate. There's a place for that, they say. I haven't found the arguable one that makes the best sense ever. And I've done this 34 years.
Yeah.
I haven't found that place. I'm sure it exists.
Yeah.
But there's a real simple, low threshold of understanding, thorough understanding of how to properly build, how to properly accumulate capital, how to properly control the banking function. You know, I mean, it's not that complicated. And then I'll say this about IUL. You know, when you're talking about IUL, it is a rate of return.
Yeah.
Sell and purchase. Well, man, if you're going for risk, you know, my personal opinion is you invest in yourself. You're the greatest asset that you have. Mm-hmm. And then secondary to that is what you have an interest in or knowledge in. Maybe it's your business. Maybe it's your family. You know, every family should operate in some form financially as a business. You know, economics, of the foundational, the root of that word is echo. It's a Greek etymology of the word, and it means order in the home. It's like Joseph, you know, running the household of Pharaoh. You know, it's echo. I don't remember the Greek words.
Yeah.
But economics, the foundation, the fundamental is order in the home, financial order in the home.
I didn't know that.
That's a fact.
Everything's Greek.
Huh?
Everything's Greek.
It all goes back to Greek, right? Huh?
I love that.
So if you want to invest in things, go invest in things that you know about, at least things that you are learning about and are interested in, right? And if you just don't know, if you're just going for a high rate of return, every investment advisor out there will help you do that, right? And so then if you want to consider the death benefit, I've said it in the past kind of flippantly. It may have sounded flippantly, but you go and invest in what you want to invest in. Go to Canada and buy a 100-year term policy.
Yeah.
You know? Then I know, well, James, you're saying buy, you know, term and invest a difference. You're essentially snuggling right up to that idea whenever you buy universal life.
Yeah.
Whenever you contort a whole life policy to the point where you're squeezing every dollar premium available in cash value as soon as possible, you're snuggling right up to that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. By term and invest a difference.
100%.
You know, so.
Because, yeah, that policy is only going to be enforced for so long. So it's essentially a whole life policy that's going to act like a term because it won't be enforced forever. And then you've invested with whatever you've invested, all that money that you've loaned out with, and you've just hoped that earned, I guess, better than what the market was earning at that point in time. I don't know. I don't even know what the thought process is in doing that. Like, what are you actually trying to do?
There's not really a lot of a thought process. Here's the illustration.
Yeah.
You know, it's uncapped with these indices. Oh, and then we'll add multipliers later. The reason the insurance company added multipliers later because the NAIC said about 9-10 years ago, oh, you can't illustrate over 6%.
Yeah.
You know, so then they add multipliers. They get around that. You know, it's just smuggling in the flawed thinking is all of that activity is. It's smuggling in flawed thinking into legitimate abilities.
And products. Yeah. You know, that's interesting. You mentioned that the whole idea that the IUL is really based off of a rate of return and how they show that as an illustration. And it seems like that's what a lot of like agents are doing, this whole 90-10 or whatever concept they're coming up with. They're doing the exact same thing. Everything's based off the illustration, not actually what happens. I don't know if you've used the term before, but I know younger folks have taught me this term, but glazing. I mean, they glaze over.
No, I haven't. I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, they glaze over all of the issues, all of the potential pitfalls, you know, to show a rate of return, to show a beautiful illustration. Yeah. And it's like, but it's not realistic. I mean, like you're saying, Dad, it's almost like buying term and investing the difference. You hope whatever you're borrowing out of that policy, by the time that policy no longer can exist because of how you've contorted it, the outstanding loan that's growing, the lack of premium that you're paying into it, which is really one of the big problems with like the 90-10s and stuff. Like you squeeze down the base so much. Pennies in, pennies out is what Nelson would say. Like the illustration can show whatever the illustration wants to show, but like actual, like what you do with these policies is important, and paying as small a premium as you can is not the route to success. It's never been. Nelson would say as high a premium as you can for as long as you can. Whatever this is, as short a premium as you can for as short of a time period as you can, is just almost the exact opposite of successful thinking.
Yeah, it is, but I totally agree. You know, the idea and some of the thread that I've read through that one particular case was it was supposed to be a limited pay. I don't know if that's true or not. Okay. I'm reading comments. I've not seen the illustration. I don't know anything about the policy. I've just read the 50-page complaint and whatever's in the news and then the digital news online and then a lot of comments, right? Limited pay in universal life, that's a misnomer.
Yeah.
That's a misunderstanding, potentially misrepresentation. I have no idea how things are represented. It can happen. You know, is it possible? Well, it's possible that I could teach my dog math. If I spend enough time with her.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. It's possible. Not probable, but it's possible. All right. You have only in dividend-paying whole life insurance or whole life. It doesn't even have to be dividend-paying. It could be issued by a stock company, non-par, non-participating in the company's financial experience. Doesn't pay a dividend, mm-hmm. right? Whole life insurance is the only life insurance that I'm aware of that has a guaranteed non-forfeiture option.
Yeah.
It's called reduce paid up, where you can actually, if you exercise that option, that contractual right, and you have to have enough cash value in there to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it has to, you can even do it with outstanding loans if there's enough cash value. That's a guaranteed limited pay. As a matter, contractually, you cannot pay another premium.
Yeah.
All right. That guarantee, as well as others, do not exist in universal life. So the idea yeah. that you're going to have a limited pay universal life is a fallacy.
I mean, the thought, if you think about,
I don't care how you structure it.
Well, the costs of UL are really in the latter years. That's the whole basis of a UL. I mean, like, you think about it. The cost of insurance goes up every year. So the biggest costs in those policies are going to be into the future. How does that mix with a limited pay?
See,
the costs are all out in the future. And that's when you're not paying?
The largest cost. The company cannot get, they created the product. They cannot provide you with a guarantee that you can eliminate the premium on a permanent contractual basis. They can't provide that guarantee. What does that tell you? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what else is, I don't want to jump off. I don't want to beat UL, my UL up. And
I don't mind.
I mean, we're not per se beating them up at all, but
it's the hot topic of the moment for sure. And I know if you're listening several years from now or whatever, like, this, you know, being like something that we're spending the Thanksgiving episode talking about may be a little odd, but right now in November of 2025, the hot topic in the insurance world is what's going on with Kyle Busch, the IUL. That's in the media. That's what the media is talking about. It's a hot topic. So that's, you know, something we're talking about covering.
Are we click farming? What do they call that? Like glazing?
No, clickbaiting is what you're looking for there. And no, I don't think we're necessarily clickbaiting. I think it's a relevant topic that should be addressed and talked about.
We have
several times
these conversations. Everything that we talk about on this channel, we talk about, deal with, address in our office on a daily basis, every day. I have, and I don't, I put plenty of carrots out, and I don't want to do that. However, you know, to me, you know, I've got this series mapped out, you know, it's roughly outlined with the flow. From the very beginning, like pre-reading Nelson, being no exposure to the infinite banking concept, to exposure to the infinite banking concept from Nelson and other works going forward, right? But then also, and I'm telling you, if you took the camera into my little war room and where I sit every day and, you know, run my little world, you would see all this documentation, works, different things, could be illustration, cases, all kinds of stuff that is the basis of, you know, the things I want to write about and talk about. And I'm just saying the series is one of them. But also in there is a nice big pile of IUL and UL, along with PUA and along with other things. So I think this is very relevant for us to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, IUL. But it is Thanksgiving too, you know, comes around every year, thank God.
You're there with your families right now. If you're listening like the day after,
oh yeah,
you're probably still there with your family, because Thanksgiving's the Thursday, so the Friday is when it's released, the podcast.
Right.
So you might still be there with your family. Maybe you're having a Thanksgiving weekend kind of a thing where you're staying over the weekend with your family. It's like, I know our clients because I hear them talk about it, but they talk to their families during these times, and as, this is what they like to talk about is, you know, the kind of the hot topics in the financial world, what's going on. So
that's when I'm going into the other room.
Oh,
I'm,
me too.
I'm not interested.
Politics and politics and like I talk enough about, you know, the financial world, you know, here on the podcast, and, yeah, you know, our offices, everything like that. I'm same way. When I'm around family, I want to talk about family, the good stuff, you know. And I think we kind of talked a little about, you know, what we're thankful for. But like a couple things that, you know, really come to mind right now, like this year, right now, what I'm thankful for is the prior and the past generations, many of whom have passed, you know, the Nelson Nashes, the Jim Rohns, you know, these teachers, like, you know, you talk about, you know, Aristotle, you talk about Plato, you talk about whoever you want to talk about, these, you know, masters of what they've done, whether it be philosophy, finance, you know, just personal coaching, them leaving these golden nuggets for us. And how blessed we are that we have the ability to like transfer this generation, this thought, these thoughts and these ideas generationally, that, you know, I, 1,000 years from now, or somebody 1,000 years from now can listen to this podcast. I don't know why you would, but maybe we're like the hot topic 1,000 years from now. That would be really wild. I wouldn't have that on my bingo card, but maybe they are. It's that ability to, you know, capture a moment in time, a thought, an idea, and then be able to transfer that generationally. And a lot of those thoughts and ideas are just as relevant today as they were then. And maybe even more so now, as we really kind of, you know, get to, I don't know, as I get older, I you know, ponder my existence more. I, you know, think about, you know, my purpose.
Who am I?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, yeah, absolutely. And it's, you have these like teachers, these, you get, you know, to the classic works, you know, you have your own personal Virgils, essentially, you know, the conglomeration of them all is like, you know, Virgil leading you through, you know, the 9 layers of hell. It's, I mean, it, you know, the world feels like a battlefield at times. I'm so thankful for these men and women, who've put together these beautiful works, and were able to give me the information that they held so dear. I'm so thankful for that. So that's my first, what I'm thankful for.
Let me chime in here a minute, because, you know, I mentioned Strabo, Herodotus, and Josephus. I know as a young man, like in high school or even prior, that you read deeply into Plato and Aristotle, and, you know, and thankful for them. And, you know, and I like the idea of the concept, the warrior and the academic, you know, they were one. They're, you know, it's in today's society, you know, you have the warrior type, muscle bound, working out, and what have you, mad props. Then you have the academic that's not necessarily physically disciplined. Hmm. You go back in time, it was not that way.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? But then I had the thought over the last couple of weeks, you know, because this is, I said it earlier, I think while it was recording, you know, I go deep into what I enjoy, right, which is, you know, history and economics and literature, knowledge, and, you know, and I'm a Christian, so I like the origins of Christianity and doctrine and all of that. You know, if you go back, and I think I did mention it, like 1500 BC, right? These works that we have, and even in some of these old works, they reference works that don't exist, right? They're just, they had access to them, we don't, right? And the way they argued back and forth, and all of that's very interesting to me. But we have a lot of those works because, I'm not going to say the majority, but quite often, those works were to be delivered verbally.
Yeah.
And what we have are their preparation of the works that they're delivering verbally, right? I mean, just think, just trying to make paper.
Yeah.
You know? 4,000 years ago. You know, and so I am thankful that we have those works, to your point.
Yeah.
And then I like when you mentioned, you know, Nelson, you know, so I'm thankful for him and his work. And I'm thankful that he took the time,
mm-hmm.
right, to do the work
and
print, right? And then I think of, you know, my father, he didn't write, you know, so I don't have, you know, resource. I have photographs and things like that. But, you know, I'm thankful for, like, Honorable Murray, Eustace Mellins. Mm. And then, you know, you mentioned men and women. There are a lot of great women in history. I learned more about them. My daughter, who just recently turned 18, she was a young lady. She has a very broad and deep interest in science and, you know, Marie Curie and, mm-hmm. and you know, all the way back to even Joan of Arc, but not medically. But I just want to point out some of the women that we don't hear about. You know, you have Einstein, you know,
Mrs.
could be controversial, you know, you can disagree with me. That's perfectly fine. I think there's a place for disagreement. You know, if we could just be civil, right? And sometimes I get passionate and, you know, comes across maybe more angry than I mean it to be, you know. But Einstein, that's not Einstein's original work, right? Wonder why he gave the Nobel Peace Prize to his wife. So there's a lot of women in history as well that don't get and hadn't received the recognition.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been usurped. And why are you talking about all that, James? Because I see the connections there.
Yeah.
You look at Nelson's work and the people continually try to usurp it.
Yeah.
You know, anything good's going to be come against.
Oh my gosh, that brings me into the next person I'm thankful for, the keepers of the knowledge.
Perfect. Who are they?
Yeah, well, they're the ones who aren't going to be talked about. You don't know their names. History has lost their names. But you talked about, you know, the works that are, you know, cited that don't exist anymore. It's like without keepers of the knowledge, that knowledge is lost.
Yep.
It's perverted. It's destroyed. So when you have people talking about 90-10 or whatever, like this is the way to do IBC, and I'm not trying to just say like, you know, all people who do 90-10 are bad. That's not a blanket statement. It's if you're saying that all policies should be 90-10, you are doing it incorrectly, 100%. If all policies should be designed one way, yep. with one structure, without any like, thought of the client themselves and what the client may be doing, or, you know, whether it's that one lady who, you know, Christy Van, who's, you know, done the YouTube, she's not an agent or anything like that. So you know, she has that presentation that shows like, you know, stuff all the money in, take it all right back out, go invest in whatever you're going to invest in, and pay as little premium as possible in the future years. And it's going to be a great policy. These are great illustrations. It's like, this is the exact opposite of what Nelson was teaching. This is not exact. Like that may be a case. Like what she presented may be a case. And I think we have cases like that. It's just like maybe 6 in 2,000 something clients that we have. It's like it's so rare to have those cases. That is not everyone's case. So I mean, there's places for these things, but that is not every case. Not everybody should be doing that. It's actually quite harmful for most people to do that. And I'm thankful for the, you know, people like us who are able to turn down money. We've turned down clients who want to pay significant premiums because it's just going to harm them. And it's glaringly obvious to us.
And half the time they're shocked, like, what?
They are. They're stunned.
This is, you know, whatever the case may be, but then that argument is used, if you don't do this, like low base, anti-base premium, it's like, you're just trying to get paid more.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, you're doing it for your commissions. And it's like, man, that's such a, it's an easy drive-by accusation. You know, nobody wants to pay commissions. Nobody likes life insurance. If I take a side note, had a conversation about a couple of years ago. I'm sitting out in my back. It was during the day, but it was later in the day. You know, I showed up and I worked that day. I show up and work every day, and I enjoy it. Had clients in the office, so it's like I was. Anyway, I'm sitting at my pool. I had a industry individual contact me and say, "Hey, James, would you talk to this guy? He might want to become an agent, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm like, sure, I'll talk to him, you know. So I had a conversation with him. He was over the phone. He's a physician and operated in two states. One is in the New England type states, and one was maybe somewhere mid in the Midwest. And he was very special. He had a very specialized practice. Mm-hmm. And you know, is successful, and he's going well, operating, like I said, two offices, and just knocking it out of the park. You know, kind of one of those, you know, here's a procedure, and I can do 27 in a week, or however many, a lot. You know, this is all I do, which is fine. I'm sure he's very good at what he did, or what he does. And so we have a conversation, you know, and I'm like, well, why in the world, you know, this is going so well, you know, why in the world would you want to be a life insurance? Are you going to leave that industry? Oh, no. I've got this one almost all completely automated. You know, this is right before maybe AI was blowing up, but everything's automated, click funnel. And it's just, you know, like Western medicine is, you know, it's like, here's a procedure. Here's a cattle process. Cow, get in line and go through the process. And I said, well, why in the world? You're not going to leave that profession. You want to be a life insurance agent. And you know, why would you do that? Well, you know, I've done it, and I think everybody should do it. And I'm like, well, why don't you just keep referring people? No, I want to be an agent. I'm like, but why do you want to be an agent? He goes, well, I want to get paid commissions. I hate paying commissions. And I'm like, which our call ended relatively shortly after that, because I'm like, well, that's pretty hypocritical, isn't it? You don't want to pay commissions, but you want everybody to pay you commissions, and you think this is like a second, you know, stream of income that you can master through click funnels and just turn it into a process where everybody's writing a premium on one exact procedure, one exact structure, and you just run them through there.
That's very apt, though, if you think about how cows react when they're led into a big line where they see the first one getting the head punched in, they fall down, they start twitching, they all start freaking out, but they can't do anything. They're stuck. They have to do this.
They don't actually see that part. They see everything right up to that.
Yeah. But still, I mean, like different animals, different livestock, they have to treat differently when putting them down, like in a big process like that. But it's like, that's the thing. It's like, it seems like a lot of people are being led into those types of processes, being led to the slaughter. It's for mass production. You know, I want to make more money. I want to make it easier on me. So I'll create this process that just, you know, streamlines everything. Mm-hmm. And then it's like people get lost in that. Yep. And like the humanity of it gets lost in that, you know? I don't know how we got so off topic there, but yeah.
I'm pretty good at that, going.
Yeah, it's okay.
All directions. I do want to say one thing that I'm very thankful for.
Yeah.
That, you know, here I've done this 34 years, right? And I'm still a young man, and I don't plan on changing. I mean, I know I'm going to age, but, you know, it's not like I'm going to wake up one day, I don't want to talk to any clients. I don't want to talk to any prospective clients. I love that. You know, I had it was a relatively after hours appointment. They were clients. They are clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just beautiful. It was beautiful. You know, we laid out a great plan, and they're, you know, they happen to be, they're like physicians, and they're quasi-local. But they made the effort to drive down here, you know, and they had to drive separately because their practices are different locations. Anyway, it's just a great, I got so much energy out of that, mm-hmm. you know. And I mean, I do these on a daily basis, but they're not always face-to-face, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we laid out a good, great, beautiful plan, and COVID comes along and some other things, and, you know, their four kids, they're funneled through med school, and, you know, a lot of things have happened, but their practices expanded too. But just looking at what we had done, mm-hmm. beautiful, beautiful. I mean, just, I'm like, you know, you open it up and it's like, my gosh, this is good. I hope somebody takes care of me, you know, when I'm older. They're not older. I'm just saying that it's nice. I'm just thankful for the what I have learned from Nelson Nash. And, you know, you mentioned Jim Rohn and Eustace Mullins and, you know, Arnold Murth. There's a lot I can go on and on. But, you know, whenever you learn mm-hmm. from the sources, right? And then you practice. And some of it's you know, you don't know. You know, you just, you don't have this complete knowing, and it, which exists in the infinite banking footprint. You know, I've read all this, James. I've looked at all that, but I still don't know. Can I see an illustration? I understand there's an element of the unknown, right? And you mentioned it earlier, too, and it's like what you do. And Nelson said it, because it's true, but it's not true just because Nelson said it. All right, but he said very often, regularly, you, the policy owner, has a greater bearing on the results of the policy than even the life insurance company.
Yeah.
And it's true. 100%. It's so true. So I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful for clients. I'm thankful that I have the youth, the vitality, the health, and the desire to continue. You know, I love this. I love people, and it's all the paperwork that I'm not keen on. But I love when good plans, even if they differ from the original outlay, right? Mm-hmm. The original path that it was laid out in the beginning, even if they differ from that, they don't have to break anything down. They don't have to burn it down and start over. They don't have to do anything but make some minor adjustments in their actions.
Right.
It's good. Minor adjustments can make it even better. That's, man, I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, since I didn't prepare, I don't have anything else, you know?
No, I think it's a good way to end is, you know, talk about the people and the things that we're thankful for. You know, again, the originators of these, you know, great content, these great works that exist, these life works that these people have put together, the keepers of that knowledge and the ones that want to preserve it, and don't let it be whatever you want to call it, perverted, bastardized. Yeah. It's just like, at the end of the day, there's so many different people who make this happen. Not when I say this, I mean the infinite banking concept, our office, like our clients, you know, first and foremost. Without clients, we're not here. So, you know, so thankful for them. They keep me sharp. They keep me on my toes. I can't rest on my laurels. Like, you know, Nelson, you know, talked about that often as well.
I've said it many times talking with young agents, you know, and I speak with agents all the time. and I love most of them. I love the ones I talk to all the time anyway. You know, I've told them from the very beginning, encourage them to consider, okay, I'm not the authoritarian. It's like, if you are going to teach, quote unquote, promote this idea of becoming your own banker, you kind of need to know what you're talking about, and you kind of need to be doing it, right? You can't give something away that you don't have, right? Well, you can't teach something that you don't know.
That's a direct Jim Rohn quote. You can't pour from an empty cup. You can't teach what you don't have.
You can't give what you don't have. You can't
give what you don't have.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, you can only fake it for so long. Your clients, your prospective clients are pretty intelligent. Mm. As a matter of fact, they're very sharp. They can spot that in a New York minute, you know? So, which is good. So in my encouragement, my continued encouragement is you need to continue learning because you got to, not that you can't learn together too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can learn with your clients, right? Which you, of course, you're going to, every case is different. Every individual is an individual and their circumstances are different. So the learning will continue, but you better be one step ahead of them. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a very positive way. You know, if you're going to teach something and promote and encourage something, you need to know what it is that you're teaching and encouraging and promoting, and you'll be better for it. Mm-hmm. And your clients will be better for it. You know, and I'm really, really thankful that we live in a country that has at least a modicum of capitalism left, right? I mean, if you comparatively around the world, you know, we have, I'm not saying we have a free market society. I'm not saying that at all. You know as well as I do, it's not. But it's the closest that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an advanced Western civilization. And I'm thankful that we still have the opportunity to practice capitalism, you know?
Amen.
Very.
You know, I think that's a pretty good place to leave off there. But
wait, you're looking at the clock, bro?
No. This is something interesting. I don't know, leave it in or we can cut it out, but I think we should talk either maybe next week, do another podcast very soon, because I'd love to go over your thoughts and just what I've seen on Trump's 50-year mortgage and that idea. Oh my gosh.
That's it. Talk about click harvesting. What do you call that?
Click funnel or clickbaiting. Clickbaiting, yeah.
Yeah, that's got a lot of play in the media.
I love the idea. I'd love to talk about it. Yeah. I'd love to get into that and discuss.
I'll talk about it next time if you want to. It's no big deal. It's like,
I'm just saying, like, it's a little bit of a teaser.
Drag it out to a 100-year mortgage, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, look.
The problem is lack of capital.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Fair.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's the problem. So.
What did Nelson say about the government coming up with solutions?
Oh, well, if they create the problem and then they create the solution to the problem that they created, don't you feel like you might be manipulated?
Yeah, just a little suspicious.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, well, what else could we talk about? I mean, the 50-year mortgage, you know, that, like, I don't want to talk an hour about that, but.
Yeah, no, but like, you know, mortgages in general, you know, just thoughts on, you know, the real estate market. And we can dive into any subject as deeply or as far as we want to go into it.
Yeah.
As far as on,
yeah,
like,
I'm like,
free
maybe
podcast.
maybe listeners, if you have a topic that you would like to be put on the table, not promising that we'll discuss them all, but, you know, maybe, you know, I'm very, keen on the simplicity of the infinite banking concept. Mm-hmm. It is not complicated at all. And you will get the results, what you want, the results that you want. You will enjoy all of the benefits that you think you can have and receive and enjoy with the infinite banking concept with properly structured policies. I know I spend a lot of time on structure. It's the firm, robust understanding between you and your agent advisor of what you want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And what realistic timeline do you want to accomplish these things? We know the future is generally unknown, but we know we're all going to graduate. And if we live long enough, we're going to stop working the way we want to or had been, you know, working 60 hours a week or what have you. Duration and the known events that are going to occur if you live, because we know with life insurance what happens if you die, right? When you graduate, there's a death benefit paid. So how much should the death benefit be diminished? How much should you overlook that?
Oh, man.
Life insurance doesn't come any other way. It comes with death benefit.
Can you grab Nelson's book on page 38 really quick? Because this is a big misnomer I think a lot of people have about the death benefit and, you know, what Nelson says about it. Specifically, he says the whole idea is to snuggle up to the MEC line, but don't cross it. This will de-emphasize the immediate is the key here, death benefit, but accentuate the banking qualities, i.e. the cash values, right? A lot of people see that and they say, okay, so Nelson says get as low a death benefit as possible. It's like, no, we are not solving for immediate death benefit when we're building these policies. And sometimes we do, right? Don't get me wrong. Sometimes solve with term, like a separate term policy that's convertible. You can solve for death benefit needs. But usually with an IBC policy, you are not trying to solve with that one policy the immediate death benefit because of how we're structuring it, how we're building it. This will de-emphasize the immediate death benefit, not get rid of or minimize.
And he doesn't say don't solve for the death benefit.
He never says that. He never says that.
It's just not going to solve the immediate death benefit. It'll de-emphasize the immediate death benefit. I mean, words have meaning, words have power, right? It's like, in addition to that, which is, I appreciate you pointing that out.
Yeah.
There's nowhere in this book, nowhere, you can't find a single page where Nelson uses term life insurance. There are no riders, term riders on these policies. There are no blended PUA riders on those policies, right? So maybe that's a deeper, you know, conversation that should be had.
Yeah.
You know, my point is that the death benefit, the need, the ultimate need, the immediate need, the ultimate need for death benefit is a considering factor. It's a consideration that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Right. While you're structuring a policy, you're taking into account a lot of different needs. Death benefit, the duration, the financing, the capital, how, you know, the lack of capital, which is the root, the foundation of the fundamental problem, is your lack of capital, my lack of capital, our lack of capital. And if you want to solve that need, lack of capital, then it's capital formation, capital accumulation. And then opportunities are attracted to that capital. So.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for, you know, you showed up in a tie, bro. I mean, man. I'm like.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. This is a Galaga tie. Little Galaga aliens, if you remember those.
Oh, okay.
No. So, look.
You look nice. You look very nice.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I got to be me, but
you know, somebody will crack on us out there, you know, in the footprint for, you know, wearing ties while they're in their ball cap and t-shirt, you know.
So have fun. I love it. Like, I think it's awesome that people feel comfortable and that clients are getting to the point where they feel comfortable watching other people who are, you know, more comfortable in whatever their attire is. I think that's awesome. But there's a lot of people that there's respect that comes with dressing up, taking the time to dress up. And show up for your clients. It's important. I get it. People like to be comfortable. I do not like wearing suits and ties. I don't. I do it because there is a there's a respect that's shown, not just to you, but the client and their time, the people who are listening in their time. I'm trying to respect you and your time by looking as professional as I can. If I'm going to speak professionally, let's look the part too. And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
I don't know.
Good luck and God bless to everyone who doesn't. No problem.
All right. Well, I'm going to go get my flip-flops on.
Yeah, I'm taking these shoes off. And this tie.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoy time with your family and appreciate you listening.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.